Good evening, everyone who's on now. Everyone here on the other end?
Hi, how are you? I'm on the speakerphone. I just want to make sure that the audience can hear. Okay, so you heard when I asked for anybody? Okay. Okay, very good. I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, okay. Perfect. I'm gonna hang up over here. Okay, very good. Okay.
Okay. First of all, I wanted to thank the coordinator and coordinators, possibly especially Mr. Israel, for bringing this together again and inviting me once again. Parshas Lech Lecha, which gives us our first exposure to Avraham Avinu, is set up as an unusual parsha because before the parsha begins, we really don't know much about Avram. Then the Parshas Noach talks about Terach having his three sons, Avram, Nachor, Haran. There's a very small hint, there's just a small little allusion to the incident of Ur Kasdim with the words Ur Kasdim, which means the fire of Kasdim. And we know from Chazal, their tradition is that Nimrod placed Avraham Avinu in the Ur Kasdim in the furnace, and it was obviously a test of his religion. A miracle happened, and he was able to survive that ordeal. And then from there, everything else seems to be history. But there's no specific reference to it written in Torah itself, which I'm just leaving as a question before we really discuss the main topic, which is we find in Sefer Daniel that when Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are challenged with their religion, not bowing down to Nebuchadnezzar's idol that he made to fashion after his own liking, they were thrown into a furnace, and the Nexuvim records a very lengthy process and a narration of what happened, what they were charged with, the sins, and how they were prosecuted, and it talks about the miracle. But for some reason, the Torah doesn't go into any detail about the actual event of Ur Kasdim. Parshas Lech Lecha introduces us to Avram for the first time and anything that he really does at the age of 75. So we really need to look at his life beforehand, what made him the person he was, truly an enigma. We find that both he and his wife Sarah were international celebrities. You find in Bava Kamma, the Gemara says that a coin was minted to commemorate the two of them, and according to Rashi, it had the image of Avram on one side, and on the other side, it had an image of Sarah. So obviously, these were internationally renowned people, and it's puzzling that we don't find, again, Chumash itself, discussion of what made them who they were, and all the events leading up to their greatness. So let's try to go into some of the Midrashim that we find in Bereishis Rabbah, the Gemara. The Rambam brings a lot of this together. The Rambam brings a lot of this together in Parak Aleph, Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Halacha Aleph, and if you bear with me, I'm going to read through the Rambam with a direct translation into English. This is Parak Aleph, Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Halacha Aleph. The Rambam starts as follows. In the days of Enosh, mankind made a grave error. And the ideas of the wise of that generation, and as well as Enosh himself, were part of this whole scandal, if we want to use that word, a way to serve Avodah Zarah in a different form than maybe what we're accustomed to. And the Rambam says this was their mistake. They said, since Hashem created the stars, he created the galaxies and all the different planets to guide the world, and he placed them in the heavens, the universe, he gave them a certain amount of honor, and they are different elements that serve before serve Hashem. They bring daytime, nighttime, climate changes, all the different power and influence that these different cosmos, he placed them in the heavens. Probably they're fit to praise and to exalt, to give them a certain honor, measure of respect. And that's considered the ruts and the interest of Hashem himself. He wants us to try to give respect to those different elements that exist in the world in order to increase and to honor Hashem's greatness. Just like a king, a human king, would want all the people who stand before him to give him honor, and that itself is considered honor of the king. So honoring a subject of the king or somebody who's a high-ranking dignitary, an officer, that itself is considered the honor of the king himself. Once this matter came to their hearts, entered their mind, they started to build, for all the different stars, temples, and they sacrificed different karbanos inside in order to praise them, to exalt them. They prostrated themselves before them, all in order to create this connection with Hashem. But it was a grave error, because this was the essence of Avodah Zarah. There was no specific command that Hashem ever wanted such a thing, and this was their human belief. They said that the ones who serve these different idols, they understand the essence of man and his purpose in the world. They weren't trying to say, of course, the Rambam notes that this is the God himself who created the world, for example, this star, this particular galaxy. However, because they were giving honor that wasn't due, and Hashem didn't command them, that was tantamount to Avodah Zarah itself. Halacha Beis, the Rambam continues, after many days passed and years, there were eventually false prophets called Nevi'i Sheker that arose in the world, and then they commanded, Hashem said, serve this particular star or all the other stars. Bring sacrifices to it, pour libations to it, and they went about, carried out this mission. Everybody was doing it, women, children. It became a standard universal culture. The prophets then would talk about, in order to personify or to make this image realistic in your mind, create certain idols and fashion. They should come with these dimensions. They should look a certain way. And everybody would gather together in front of these idols to try to serve as the prophets commanded. Then it got more elaborate. They would say, if you make an idol this way, it has the ability to help you for this. If you change its format, you make it look a little different, it could bring bad to you. The priests were then installed, and they said that with this type of a service, you can also have success or failure. Other people who are creating falsehoods would stand and say, this particular star or this particular angel spoke with them and instructed us to tell all of you to serve me in a particular fashion. So the Rambam describes, he continues how things got out of control and they started to extend throughout the ages and the generations to such a point where people totally lost focus and forgot that the origin of all this is God himself. And it became a point of you serve the actual image itself, the idol itself, thinking that that itself is the creator. It got to a point where, as the Rambam concludes in Halacha Beis, the only people who are still dedicated to Hashem and devoted were the people we find in Chumash, like Chanoch, Mesushalach, Noach, Shem, and Aver. But everybody else was succumbing to this culture, except the Rambam concludes Halacha Beis until the pillar of the world was born, and that is Avraham Avinu. Halacha Gimel, he continues. He says, once this individual Avram was weaned, and that's a reference to the three-year-old age that the Gemara talks about, he started to recognize that there's a creator. He looked around, he was a very deep thinker, and he looked around and he said, it's impossible that such a complex universe should just come about through one particular star or one image. There has to be a master builder. And that's the concept of, you find in Masechta Brachos, there is nobody who called Avraham Avinu Hashem Kodesh Baruch Hu Adon until Avraham Avinu came and recognized Hashem as Adon. Adon, master, the master planner, the master builder, architect of the world. The Rambam continues describing what Avraham Avinu's philosophy was. He walked, went around publicizing his concept, his ideals, to all those around him. Family first, obviously, immediate community, but the word started to spread that there's in their opinion, an infidel. And Nimrod, who was in charge of trying to eradicate this type of a poison, this toxin that he felt was in their midst, he threw Avraham Avinu into the furnace because it's up to a challenge of, it's my way or you end up in the furnace dead. And the mace happened. Avraham Avinu escaped from that, left, and everything else starts to really develop in Parshas Lech Lecha. That's the Rambam going through Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. He continues after that, Yitzchok Avinu Yaakov. But I wanted to just stop at this point of the Rambam and dwell on a question that the Ravid asks, which is, if Avraham Avinu, he says, according to the Rambam, would travel throughout the world and call out people, rallies, people, neighborhoods, and he would say, this is the proper way to serve Hashem. Idolatry doesn't have any substance to it. The Ravid wants to know, what were Shem and Aver doing this entire time, not protesting against all this idolatry that was taking place? A very odd phenomenon that he doesn't find a very clear answer. He says it's possible that they were protesting this behavior, but people were hiding their images behind the door. They were placing them in place in different locations where they couldn't be found, and Shem and Aver didn't do a good enough job to really eradicate and create a real change in the culture that people should dispose of all these things until Avram came in with his dynamic way of preaching what he believed in to be the emes. He got everybody to finally change their ways. He writes that as a possibility. But I wanted to dwell on that point to understand Noach, who is Avram's predecessor. You see Rashi and Parshas Noach compares the two, Noach with Avram, and understand what exactly the hashkafa was of the Gedolim who came before Avram, how they dealt with the movements that were going on in the world, and what made Avram so different and so successful. So I want to start off with the famous Medrash that we all learned as children. It's at the end of Parshas Noach, and it describes the whole incident of Ur Kasdim. A quote from the Medrash Rabbah with the following story. Avram is instructed to take care of the idols that Terach had in his shop. And we know the famous story how he places the stick in the largest idol. He talks about his experience with the different different customers who came in. So I'm going to translate in English and read through the Medrash and dwell on this Medrash to try to understand Avram's personality, what made him who he was. Rabbi Chiya, the grandson of Rav Avda of Yafo, said Terach was somebody who was worshipping idols. One time he had to leave, until he had a store, where he was selling idols, and he had Avram watch the store while he was away. Avram was selling the merchandise, obviously getting into conversations with the customers. So a fellow walked in, and he wanted to buy an idol. So Avram asked him, how old are you? He said either he was 50 or 60. So Avram would say, woe is to this person who is 60 years old, and he wants to bow down and worship something which is just made today. The individual was embarrassed, and he'd walk out. Okay, no revenue for that customer. Another time, a woman came in carrying in her hand a plate that had fine flour on it, a meal offering, and she said, "Here's an offering I want to give towards the idols." Avram got up, he took a stick in his hand, he broke all the idols, and he put the stick in the hand of the largest idol that was in the shop. His father returned from his trip, he had to be away, and he saw the chaos that was going on. He said, "Well, who did all this?" So Avram told him, "How can I deny anything from you? I'll tell you the truth. A woman came, she was carrying this plate of fine flour. She said, 'Bring this as a sacrifice before all the other idols.' She brought it to them, and there was a whole, an argument broke out. Each idol said, 'I want to eat first,' until the largest one, who's the strongest, muscled his way into everything, destroyed all the other idols, and took the meal offering to consume. Terach said to Avram, 'What kind of nonsense are you telling me? They don't know anything. They don't have any intelligence. They don't have the ability to speak or to think.' So Avram said to his father, 'Your ears should hear what your mouth is saying. How could you live in this paradox, in this life of contradiction? You understand that the idols don't have any substance, so what's this game all about?' Terach, in his frustration or fury, handed him over to Nimrod, and Nimrod then has a conversation with him. There is a Sefer HaYashar, one of the lesser-known Midrashim that talks about Terach actually being one of Nimrod's advisors, dignitaries, so they had a very close relationship. So Terach was definitely treading in dangerous waters when he was when he had the son Avram, who had a very different way of looking at things. Nimrod told Avram, "Bow down to fire." So Avram said, "Why choose fire? Bow down to water, because water has the ability to extinguish fire." Then Nimrod said, "Okay, bow down to water." Avram said, "Bow down to the clouds, because the clouds carry the water vapor." Nimrod said to him, "Okay, bow down to the clouds." He said, "If that's the case, we should bow down to the wind, because the wind is able to scatter the clouds. It has an extra level of power." So Nimrod said, "Bow down to the wind." So he said, "We should bow down to people, because people are full of air and are able to continue doing their thing. They walk and they don't seem to deflate or inflate too much." So he said, the Nimrod finally in his frustration said, "You're giving me all of this nonsense talk, prattle." He said, "I only bow down to fire." That was Nimrod's force that he believed in the world. So I'm going to, like a Zoroastrian, the ancient group of people that used to bow down and worship fire. So he said, "I'm going to throw you into a furnace, and we'll see the God that you bow down to, who you believe in, if he can save you from it." We know Rashi talks about this as well. Haran was there. He was he had a conflict. He didn't know who he should join, Terach Nimrod's side or his brother Avram. And he made this deal in his mind. He said, "If Avram comes out and is saved, then I'll join his side. But if not, then I'm going to join Nimrod." Avram went out, entered the Kivshan, he entered the furnace, and he was saved. While Haran, because he had that intellectual debate, that religious debate, he didn't merit to get saved, and he was burnt. That's the end of the Medrash. It's a wonderful Medrash to share with children, but as you get older, you start to think and wonder, we have to understand this on a much more sophisticated level. What exactly was this conversation, the dialogue that Nimrod had with Avram, Terach had with Avram? They knew what they're dealing with. Terach himself understood that the idols don't have any substance. Then what's the purpose of spending all that money creating them and fooling everyone with this, as well as Nimrod? The approach behind all this is, based on this Rambam, that when the Dor Enosh developed this system of Avodah Zarah, where it originally started where they recognized the Creator, but they felt that it's okay and it's acceptable to give attention to particular forces in nature and in the world that you feel that can carve a path and fashion a derech for a person to live by. Some people who are more emotional, they'll find something that's more merciful, that can be an icon of mercy, would be something that they want to fashion, develop, and place that on their mantelpiece. Another person who is more may have more of a macho type of a personality. He'll want something that looks strong and muscular, like the strongest idol that Avram was referring to in his incident in the shop. Everybody has a different punctuality, different traits that everybody can relate to. When the different customers walked into the shop, at that point, as the Rambam said, things had gotten out of control where they lost sight entirely of who the Creator was. But Tarach, from the more intelligent individuals in the world, understood that there's a Creator, but felt that it was acceptable to accentuate and to develop and create and fashion idols that represent different feelings or beliefs, ideals, that are things that can connect you to Hashem. Avram's debate and controversy that he created and stirred with Nimrod and Terach was precisely this point. Can you accentuate and put a focus and give a priority to particular type of midos when it's not balanced entirely with the essence of Hashem? We know that Hashem has the names of Yudkei Vavkei. There are shemos of Rachamim, Chesed, the seven different names that can't be erased that have Kedusha. They all emanate from the shem Yudkei Vavkei, but they're different behaviors, midos, that or hanhagos, that Hashem conducts himself throughout history in the world. Rashi talks about this in Chumash. At the Yam Suf, Hashem appeared, quote-unquote, as a warrior. While at Har Sinai, he appeared to be more merciful, sitting on a throne as an kivayachon, elderly person, with more rachamim. All these midos are all emanating from the Shem Yud Kevavke Havaya. But to take one shame and say that name has the kedusha, the sanctity, and the others are more secondary, that's heresy. We can't do that. That's the Avodah Zarah that the Rambam is telling us that was the grave error of the Dor HaNoach. Tarach thought, by allowing the creation of different idols that give priority to particular feelings, the customer who is 50 or 60, he wants a particular idol, Avram sends him out of the store, the woman who wants to bring a plate of fine flour. All these different images that were in the store were for the customers to choose how they want to live their life and what they want to accentuate. But Avram told Tarach that you're making a big mistake, because without the proper balance, we'll forget who the Creator is entirely. And then it's just serving a star, serving a planet, or serving just any image that you want to fashion on your own. And in a sense, it all comes down to serving oneself. When it's not balanced and it doesn't have the guidance from the Torah, then you're choosing how you want to live. So it's really avodah, instead of avodah zara, it becomes avodah atzmi, serving oneself. Tarach, in his frustration, or perhaps his anger, that Avram wasn't willing to accept what he felt was right in the world, handed him over to Nimrod. It could be also he was afraid, and he didn't want to have blood on his hands, so he sent him off out of the house and sent him to Nimrod, so Nimrod could deal with him, who was his boss, the master, king at the time, in Shinar. And Nimrod had that discussion as well. He said, I personally believe in the power of fire. Fire is something that, to me, represents everything that I want to control in my particular empire, the kind of the beauty of fire, the power of fire, perhaps the behavior that fire rises from the bottom towards the heavens, so it has a very spiritual look to it, as opposed to, for example, rain, where it comes from the heavens down, so it seems to descend in spirituality. All these different ideas were things that Nimrod wanted to put focus on. So the first thing when he met Avram was, bow down to fire. So Avram started with the same debate. He said, why fire? How about water? Water has the ability to extinguish fire. And they went back and forth until finally Nimrod was fed up. He said, I can't get anywhere with him. And he said, I'll throw you into the fire and we'll see if you're God. In other words, you're complete unadulterated belief in God without any side distractions or focuses can save you from this particular fire, which it did. The Gaon Bava Vastra talks about how he actually was imprisoned for 10 years before the event of Ur Kasdim. So Nimrod was using numerous methods to try to convince Avram things that we know happened during the Inquisition, intimidation, torture. He was for 3 years, the Gemara says, in Cusa, which is probably a neighboring country of Shinar, in the Bavel region. And then for another 7 years, he was in Kardu. I'm not sure exactly where these places are, but they're probably from the vicinity. And these could have been like prison camps for federal crimes, etc. So he spent a lot of time in isolation, and nothing would sway him from the truth. That's our first impression that we're getting from the Midrashim here of what kind of a clad iron personality Avraham had. He was somebody that if he recognized the truth, nobody could sway him. It didn't matter what you did, intimidation, torture, death, it didn't matter. That's how strong he was. The Gemara says that at three he recognized that there was a creator, which the Rambam alluded to, and then the Gemara says 48, which is another age, which means it's probably another advanced stage of recognition, and then finally we're introduced in the parsha 75, and Hashem gives the test of Lach Lecha. But before we get to Lach Lecha, let's take a look at in contrast of Ram to Noach. Noach, we know from the Midrashim, the Seder Olam, which is an old Midrash written by Rabbi Yossi, Yossi ben Chalafta, Avraham Avinu was a student of Noach. So he knew him, he studied with him, and he seemed to do things in a very different way. What exactly was that difference? Rashi says in the beginning of Parshas Noach that Tamim Haya B'Dorosav, he was complete in his generations. What does it mean in his generations? Rashi brings conflicting views from the Gemara. Some say that he was outstanding, and some say it was only in his generation that he was outstanding, but in Avraham Avinu's generation, he wouldn't be considered anything too special. What was it that made Noach on such a lower level than Avraham? After all, Noach was his teacher. So again, looking at the Midrashim, the Torah Shabbat gives us a clue as to what the difference was between Noach and Avraham. In the Bereishis Rabbah, which is the Medrash Rabbah, part of Sefer Bereishis, Noach's approach to guiding people and to correcting their ways was a little bit combative and didn't come across with a lot of caring or warmth. So, for example, Hashem tells him to build the Teva, to spend 120 years. The conversations would probably go something along these lines. Hey, Noach, what are you doing? I'm building a Teva. What's the Teva for? I've seen you've been working on it for years. He said, because God's going to bring a flood. Why is he bringing a flood? Because all you guys are rotten. Oh, that's nice. He walks away. So the conversation didn't really get too far. He was pretty much insular. He was very combative almost. Maybe not combative, but defensive. And people didn't take to it very well. The Midrashim use a terminology of Noach telling everybody, you're empty, you're reikim, straighten out what you're doing, you're constantly doing averus. But it wasn't done with the warmth that Avraham had. So Chazal talked about the Eshel, which was an inn, or it was a tree that had a lot of different, that produced wonderful fruit. Avraham was the innovator of the modern kiruv concept. He went out, he made people comfortable, he invited them to his tent, gave them a great meal like we find in Parshas Vayera with the Malachim. And while he was sitting and everybody was relaxed and comfortable, he would engage in conversation. So where do you come from? What do you believe in? What do you do for a living? And through all these conversations and making them comfortable, he started to focus a lot on the religion. And he was targeting this culture that pervaded the whole international community of this Avodah Zarah. And through this process, he was able to get everybody to recognize that there's an Adam, there's a creator. So it was only with that warmth and that he was very easy and comfortable to talk to, Avraham was able to get people to do the right thing. So imagine if Avraham Avinu was the one instructed to build the Teva, the 120 years really would have taken reasonably 120 years because he would be constantly talking to people and having a comfortable conversation with them while he was working on the Teva and discussing all the issues that were going on and why the flood would take place. But Noach was very private. He had a conversation and lasted maybe a minute or two, and that was the end. That success that Avram was able to do by getting down to people's level, conversing with them, and understanding what made them tick was what made Avram so successful. However, as warm and sensitive as Avram was with this chesed, as we see, inviting people into the tent, serving them an unusually huge amount of food, he would not sway for his religious beliefs. So when the Malachim came and they appeared to be travelers and he thought that they were the ones worshiping the dust in their feet, he wouldn't let them in the tent until they washed their feet first. Wash your feet, then we'll talk. And he must have done it in such a way that it didn't offend people, because they knew that it's a minor thing, he'll have his way, and there'll be much more of a positive experience by staying in his tent than just checking out and moving on. Especially with the hot desert sun, they're thirsty, they're starving. And that's how he pretty much lived his life that led up to what we see here in Parshas Lech Lecha. Interestingly, Avraham Avinu was actually in Eretz Canaan once before when he was 70. And we know this from Midrashim. Rashi talks about this in Parshas Bo, where the Pasuk says that Moshe b'nei Yisrael, Asher Yashur b'Mitzrayim, the amount of years that the Jews lived in Mitzrayim was 430 years. We know there's only 210. There's another Pasuk that talks about 400 years. So Rashi resolves all this based on the Midrashim, that from the time of the Bris Ben Abisarim until the Jews left Mitzrayim was a total of 430 years. From the birth of Yitzchak until they left Mitzrayim was 400 years, and the actual physical stay of the nation in Mitzrayim was 210 years. We know that Avram was 100 at the time that Yitzchak was born. So 400 from Yitzchak's birth till they leave Mitzrayim. The extra, the additional 30 years is from the Bris Ben Abisarim, which means Avram was 70 at the Bris Ben Abisarim. Torah is written a little bit out of order, because it introduces us to Avram when he's 75, the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, but only later on we see by the Bris Ben Abisarim where we're going back and reversing, rewinding 5 years to when he's 70, which we know is Ein Mukdam U'Meuchar B'Torah. Torah is not written as a history book. It's written to give you events that are supposed to give you a perspective and teach you the lesson that it needs to teach. That would have shed a lot of light on what the Nisayon, the test was of Lech Lecha. The Medrash says, Yalkut Shimoni, in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, when Avram was traveling, leaving his birthplace, or custom, he was traveling and searching for different places to set up shop and to launch his kiruv career. He came to the north of Eretz Yisrael, called the Sulma Shel Tzar, up in the Tyre neighborhood, which is current-day Lebanon. And as he entered the land from the north, the Medrash says he saw people conducting themselves in a very efficient, organized fashion. Where he came from, he saw people leading somewhat of an impetuous life. There was a little too much drinking going on, lack of structure. People weren't taking care of business correctly. Because when he entered Canaan for the first time from the north, he saw people planting when they were supposed to plant. They were weeding when they needed to, harvesting when they needed to. He liked the structure and the look of the land. Things were neatly plowed. There was probably a strong family life concept, communities. He liked it a lot. What happens after that point is interesting. He comes to Canaan, and this is the Bris Ben Abisarim. Hashem tells him, I'm going to give you this land to your offspring. But for some reason, he leaves. Why did he leave? He must have had a major lack of success. He was trying to talk to the local Canaanim, and they wouldn't listen. They felt that Avodah Zarah is the way of life, and they weren't going to agree to any of his ideals. So he left in frustration that he wasn't successful in Canaan. And he went back to Ur Kasdim, Haran, etc. Then Hashem introduces us in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha to the Nisayon, the test of Lech Lecha. That's why it was a test. Because at 75, 5 years after he first entered Canaan, Hashem says, go back again where you didn't have any success and start all over again. Otherwise, the famous question is, what kind of a test is of Lech Lecha if Hashem promises you, I'm going to give you wealth and you'll have children? What's the test? If all the guarantee is locked in, then there's nothing to be concerned about. The answer is, because I was once there and I saw how difficult these people are to communicate with, I can't imagine how I could have any success at this point. That's why there was a test. Hashem tells him at 75, go back where you didn't have any inroad and you weren't able to get through to the individuals and try it all over again. That type of devotion that Avram had was something that perhaps even Noach hadn't achieved in his lifetime. He was building a teva, he did what he was supposed to, but it was that extra level, that extra measure of all these nesionis that we find that brought Avram on a much higher madrega. Later on in the parsha, as an introduction to the mitzvah of Bris Milah, Hashem commands Avram Avinu, his halech lefanei v'hayei samim, walk before me and be complete. This is at the age of 99. He's been walking with Hashem his whole life. What happened here that Hashem was expecting him to live on an even higher level? Rashi in the beginning of Parshas Noach, you notice that first pasuk where it says, Eso lukim es halach Noach, Rashi says, with Noach, the Torah writes, Eso lukim es halach Noach, Hashem, Noach walked with Hashem. While Avram says, it's halech lefanai, walk before me, walk in front of me. Rashi explains, Noach needed somebody to hold his hand. So Hashem, kifayachol, he had to hold his hand in order to encourage him to walk in his ways of Yerushalayim. While Avram, Hashem told him, his halech lefanai, walk in front of me, you don't need my help. I know you can handle it on your own, independently. That's his halech lefanai. Unculus, take a close look at Unculus, he makes the difference between Noach and Avram even more astounding. Unculus writes, in the beginning of Parshas Noach, Esra Lokim Nesalach Noach, Noach walked b'dachalto d'Hashem, with the fear of Hashem. That's the Aramaic word dachalto, which is Aramaic for Yira. Similarly in Parshas Bereishis, when the lineage is recorded of all the 10 generations from Adam down to Noach, Chanoch, who's in the middle of the list, it says, Vayishalech Chanoch es Elokim. Chanoch walked with Hashem. Unculus also translates Dachalta. He walked with the fear of Hashem. With Avram, the same word is used, Hishalech, the same letters. The vowels are different by just one dot. Instead of es Elokim es Halach Noach, with a segol, it's Hishalech Lefanai, which is the Tzerei. Difference in translation is, Hishalech is declarative, Hishalech is imperative. Noach walked with Hashem, it's telling us information, while Hishalech Lefanai is imperative, Hashem instructs Noach, walk before me. And Unculus says, when translating the word Hishalech, the imperative Tavron, Palach Kodamai, Pei Lamaches, which is Aramaic for serve me. Which means Unculus took the same word that Rashi seems to deal with in a similar way, and just changing the nuance by saying Noach needed help while Avram was able to walk independently, Unculus puts it in a whole different plateau. Noach walked with the fear of Hashem, but Hashem is commanding Avram to serve me, Avoda. What's the difference between the two? There's a Beis HaLevi who writes on this pasuk, what exactly is the word tamim? Hishalech lefanai v'hayei samim, which is the instruction Hashem gave to Avram. Because the concept of tamimus, of being wholesome, is that a person should do the will of Hashem and not interrogate and think deeply why he commanded him to do it. He says even though it's fine and encouraged for a person to think deeply why this mitzvah was given, what's the purpose behind it, how does it change your personality, the way you behave, etc., But that's all in the academics. When it comes to actually doing the mitzvah, you have to put aside all the different interrogations, the deep analytical thoughts. You have to put all that aside and just do it because Hashem told you to do it. He brings a medrash in Tehillim. The pasuk says in Tehillim, Ashrei Tamimei Derech, Haholkim B'Saras Hashem. Praise are the ones who are complete in their ways. They walk in the Torah of Hashem. The medrash says that the Tamimim and the Hasidim is the way to describe the Dor HaMidbar. Why Tamimim? Because they accepted the Torah of Tamimus and wholesomeness. When Hashem told them, Kol chelu v'shar v'chesev lo sochelu, any fat of a ox or a sheep you shall not eat, they didn't say to Hashem, why? They just accepted it. He told them, when you come into Eretz Yisrael, you have to observe the laws of Arla. The first 3 years of a fruit-bearing tree, you can't eat the produce. They didn't ask Hashem why. They accepted it. Even though they accepted the Torah, they didn't ask any questions. They just said, Nasa. That's Ashrei Tumei Derech. Beis Halevi explains the depth of this medrash is that Tumim by definition means that a person accepts to do the particular command without knowing the reason. And even if, can I add to this, even if the mitzvah itself seems to go against everything you've been taught until now by Hashem himself, and the greatest example of that was the Akedah, which is the paradigm and the climax of all of Avram's achievements. Somebody who lived his whole life of chesed, to do, be sensitive to people, help them out, feed them, take care of them, care for them, and here Hashem tells him, offer your son as a sacrifice. Even though we know the whole thing wasn't supposed to be taken literally, but in his mind it was translated that way, and he did it. He didn't ask any questions. He was even able to go to sleep that night, because his Vayashkem Avram Babokri woke up in the morning. It's a tremendous mental stamina to be able to not only accept the decree and the command, but to be able to go to sleep comfortably that night without tossing and turning. That was the greatness of Avram. Beis Halevi continues, based on a Gemara in Kiddushin, to explain this in a legal context, the Gemara says in Kiddushin and Daf Kof Beis, if a person is attempting to do a legal acquisition of large livestock, cows, for example, camels, very large buffaloes, large animals, The way to do the acquisition always is to display that you are the owner. Depending on the item, Chazal adjust what the proper form to do an acquisition is. So for very large livestock, you can't lift it. It's too heavy, obviously. Even though Hagbah, lifting it off the ground, is the most ideal form of an acquisition because you're lifting it out of the premises. Meshicha is recommended, which literally means to pull. How is the acquisition done? You call to the animal, this large livestock, and it comes towards you. That's a form of meshicha, even though you're not physically yanking it and pulling it by the reins. The Gemara says that if it's a human slave who is overage, he has a mind of his own, even if you call him and he comes to you, that's not considered a valid acquisition. We're talking about an Ebeknami, not an Ebedivri. So it's a Gentile slave. And the only way to acquire the Eved Kanani is if for the new master to physically grab him and to take him in towards himself or into his property, but to call him and he should come towards you does not display ownership. The Gemara says the following. Why is there a difference in the halach of how to do the acquisition? Because Adam Adate Denafshe Ka'avid, people do things independently. Avol behema date demarka avda. An animal acts based on the command of its owner, which the Beis Halevi explains is that even though you or the new owner are trying to call the Eved's attention, and he's coming, but there's always a hidden agenda, which you never can really fully know. There's an ulterior motive. He's not totally divorced from all of his personal interests and devoted 100% to the new owner. He's doing it maybe out of fear. He's doing it because that's what everybody's expecting him to do. There's always some hidden motive or intent. While an animal, which doesn't have very deep analytical complicated thought processes, just moves and comes towards the master. That alone is considered an act of Mashiach without any physical hauling. Beis HaLevi says, this is exactly what Hashem meant when he told Avram, Hishalech lefanei v'hayei samem, in the imperative. I want you to act literally like a behemoth. Not av chas v'shalom, lose your das, and to go senile. The opposite. Maintain all that fantastic depth. But whenever I command you to do something, do it without any questions asked. As if to say you're a behemoth, and you don't have any other ulterior motive. There's nothing that's straying you from doing something different. And as I said before, the Akedah brought out this level of service that Unkelus talks about, plach, the service that Noach was not able to achieve. To do something that was so antithetical to everything that Avram stood for, and in his mind, to literally sacrifice and kill his son that Hashem promised, this is going to be your progeny, and offer him as a sacrifice, cutting his neck like an animal. And perhaps in a more symbolic and esoteric way, you find that there's that relationship of the animal sacrifice, where Hashem is asking Avram to behave, not think, but behave like the animal, which operates entirely based on the master's interest. And instead of Yitzchak becoming the behemoth sacrifice, he finds in the thicket a ram, which is the true animal that's supposed to be the sacrifice, while Avram and Yitzchak maintain their human greatness and the level that they achieved at the Akedah. Have a good Shabbos, everyone.